On this episode of The Edge Podcast, ClearEdge CEO and founder Leslie Vickery interviews Mary B. Lucas, Chief Talent Officer of Supplemental Healthcare and author of Lunch Meat and Life Lessons, Sharing a Butcher's Wisdom. Mary shares the meaning and power of comeback sauce, how to find the like, and the value of leaving lasting impressions on those around you. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, everyone. This is Leslie Vickery, CEO and founder of ClearEdge Marketing. Thank you so much for joining us on the Edge podcast, where I am thrilled to welcome Mary B. Lucas, the Chief Talent Officer of Supplemental Healthcare. Mary, welcome to our show.
I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for asking me, Leslie.
So, Mary, I've known you in the industry pretty much since I started actually in the industry, which was with Spherion at the time interim back in 1998. And while we did not work closely together, I always knew about you and I've heard you keynote several events. I've participated with you in discussion groups through ASA. I've read your book. It's really an honor to have you on our podcast. So thank you again for joining us. I have to ask you a question. This is a good question because the very first line of your LinkedIn profile, which I bet you get asked this a lot, says, I believe in hard work, creating genuine connections, and the power of comeback sauce. Tell us about comeback sauce.
I would love to tell you about comeback sauce. It's one of my favorite stories. You know, when you introduced me, you said my name was Mary B. Lucas. And I use the B in my name because my maiden name was Bickelmeyer. But I have to tell you, growing up in sales in this industry and as a recruiter, I was happy to lose that Bickelmeyer maiden name and become Lucas because it was a lot easier for people when I was leaving voicemails and messages. But my main name is Bickelmeyer, and I was number 9 of 10 children growing up. And my father was a butcher by trade with an 8th grade education, yet he was the smartest man I ever knew. But I didn't realize that when I was 22 years old, graduate, first generation college graduate. And here I am. I get my first job offer right out of college, and I'm offered a job as a recruiter. And so and the company at that time, it's funny when you were introducing me, it was interim and steering on. Well, in those days, ADECO was ADIA, Personnel Services, ADIA. So here I am, 22 years old, completely full of myself, college graduate, and I get a job offer to work as a recruiter for ADIA Personnel Services, a corporate job. And I remember my father was at home, and when I got the phone call, and I said, I got the job. I started squealing, I got the job. And he called me over to the butcher block table, which was the gathering place in our family home. And he said, you got that job you wanted. You're going into the people business. And I rolled my eyes. I looked at him. I said, no, Dad, I'm going into the staffing industry. Whatever, you know. So right. he looked at me and he said, get out of your own way, girl. You're going into the people business. Don't overcomplicate it. And he said, we're all in the people business. I don't care what you do for a living. You're going to find people work and companies people. I'm in the people business. I help people put food on their table. And he said, you know, you need to get out of your own way and you need to realize that you are in the people business. We all are. And the most important thing you can do is make meaningful connections with the people around you, one person at a time, and you'll be successful. And it was funny because at that moment I thought maybe I should get out of my own way and listen to him because he was incredibly successful. Not only did he have his own business, which is still thriving business, Bickelmeyer Meats in Kansas City, Kansas, but for a guy with an 8th grade education, he'd done really well in real estate. And I said, okay, Dad, I'll listen to you. What's the key to your success? How do you succeed in the people business? And without missing a beat, he said, don't forget the comeback sauce. I said, what do you mean by that? Don't forget the comeback sauce. And I didn't want to be disrespectful, but I kind of rolled my eyes like, what a cheesy thing to say, don't forget the comeback sauce. And he looked at me and he said, Mary, don't forget the comeback sauce means make a lasting impression on the people around you. Always think about every interaction you have. Have you left the person you connected with better off than they were before they met you, before they connected with you? And I kind of was, again, still a little disrespectful because I said, Dad, I know you tell me I'm going to the people business, but I am going to the staffing industry, and that might work for you with the meat market because you want your customers to come back, but it won't work for me because in this business, there's a lot of people we don't want to come back. I mean, there's no shows, no calls. There's just people that, you know, they let you down. They don't have the right skills. Right. And he looked at me and he said, wow, for an educated young lady, you have a lot to learn. Those people you have to let down, those people you have to let go, they deserve an extra special dose of Comeback Sauce. You want to be the person who treats everyone with integrity and respect, even if they let you down. You want to let them go in a way that makes them feel like, okay, you know, she delivered that news in a way that made me feel like she treated me fairly. And I think there's so much more to that. I have a TED Talk about that, actually. If you Google Comeback Sauce Mary B. Lucas, you can have see the TED Talk on it. There's so much to that story. But I think for me, my big takeaway was, you want to leave everyone a little bit better off than because of their interaction with you, even if you're delivering bad news, no matter what it is. And then they'll remember you. They'll, you know, all those connections, Leslie, you know what a small world this is. Think about how we've connected in so many places and times. And you always want to think about the impression you make on the people around you. And later on, years later, when I started speaking about the book I wrote called Lunch Meat and Life Lessons about my dad, and it starts chapter one with that story of Comeback Sauce and his advice for me when I started in the people business. But I think for me, I looked back and people would say, give us the recipe. What does that mean? How do you pour Comeback Sauce on everyone? And I realized this isn't even in the book, but I realized there is a recipe. It's one part recognition, it's one part connection, and you add a dose of the unexpected. And those three things, that's the recipe for Comeback Sauce. And the ingredients are different every single person you connect with because everybody's different. What's important to you isn't important to someone else, but you have to think about what's important to this individual and how do I make the most powerful and meaningful connection with them that will leave a lasting impression. And I mean, I'm not always great at it, but I sure do work at it every day. And I really believe in the power of it because I think that's been the essence or the core to the most meaningful connections I've had in my whole life, personally and professionally. So that's the story of Comeback Sauce.
Oh my gosh. I've been taking notes as you've been speaking, and I already have a full page of different things. And really, because Mary, I mean, it's no surprise that you're the chief talent officer. When you think back to your dad giving you the advice about the people business and looking ahead now at the title and the role you have and the impact that you're making, and we'll talk a little bit about that here in a minute, on your company and the people who surround you. It's really incredible. And I love that you've been able to keep him with you through not only the book, but in everything you talk about and what you do. And I think that's a lesson for all of us, myself included, is to always remember that the feedback from your parents, while sometimes we might roll our eyes or think that, you know, they don't know what they're talking about, clearly in this case, your father was right on target. So, and he was right. People business we are in, and every business. And I love the recipe, the recognition, connection, and dose of something unexpected. So I'm going to transition, and we'll talk a little bit more about the book here in a little bit. But I want to transition that because your role, and I'm curious to hear basically your path through corporate and what you did, and maybe part of the recipe that you just talked about and how that fit with your career path. You've basically held every role in the staffing industry as you worked your way into the C-suite. And unique to other executives I've interviewed, I guess I would say in addition to traditional sales, you've also held a lot of operations roles such as marketing, training, service delivery, organizational and executive coaching. Tell us a little bit about your version of the corporate ladder. We often talk about how people, you know, in their minds may envision that it goes straight up and down like a ladder. However, the path to the C-suite is often a little bit of a maze and a back and forth and up and down in different directions. Tell us a little bit about your path.
Well, as I mentioned, I started with Adia Personnel Services right out of college in 1980, believe it or not. So I was 22 years old, college graduate, 1980, and it was an incredible time to be in staffing / the people business, as my dad called it. So, you know, we're growing. Those were the days of like Kelly Girls and you know, it's just so many things that now I think about now inappropriate. But I think, look back and I think, you know, we had Manpower and Kelly Girls, and then Audia was a new up-and-coming company, a Swiss-based company that came into the U.S., and I was able to join the organization at a time when, you know, in the 80s, I mean, big hair, big margins, big shoulder pads, and, you know, it was really so much fun, and I feel like I lucked into the right industry for me, being a people person. And so, you know, here I was a recruiter and a very competitive, you know, number 9 of 10 kids, very competitive. You know, I was never good in sports. I was always so tall and skinny and lanky, but I found something I could compete in. And I wanted to be the number one recruiter. And it was pretty easy because you knew what it was. It was your gross margin. You know, it was your, you looked at your revenue, what revenue you brought in. And then I became, you know, because of the numbers that validated it, I became a branch manager, then an area manager, then a, you know, all the way up through a RVP for running 1/3 of the North American operations for Audia. And you know, it was my, the president of our organization left the company and he went to a different company, Ray Marcy, who I think I you know. And he took several of us with him, including Gail Cordes, Lisa Francis, Gary Peck, some names you might know from the past. And we all left and went and became part of Personnel Pool, which became Interim, which became Spherion, and now sold to Randstad. And so, again, I was still on the P&L track. So I had this, you know, opportunity to continue to always look at my numbers. And so in my team, I think the hardest role I ever had was to go from an individual contributor to a multi-unit manager where you're working through people. And so, you know, I just remember, though, it was always based on the numbers. Yet what I loved so much and was so passionate about was I loved influencing the organization overall, not just my region, not just my results. I loved that. So there came a time when we had a huge merger with Norrell. Interim and Norrell came together, and I was asked to come into a corporate-based role where shared services, you know, all of the support arms of the organization were under one umbrella. So it was learning, you know, and it was, you know, everything that had to do with key initiatives and rollout of new things that, and just, you know, anything that had to do with helping to support the offices. And because I grew up in the industry and I grew up at the from the desk, I had a lot of respect in a corporate support role because, you know, a lot of times you'll hear, oh, one, you know, if you haven't done this job, you don't understand my job when you're in corporate support. And I fell in love. And honestly, I think although it's harder to justify the impact you have on the organization when you don't have that direct P&L responsibility, the influence you have and what you can do from supporting an organization through mergers and acquisitions and really growing a culture, that was my passion. And, as much as I loved every other aspect, I think when you're true to yourself and you find the spot, you find how you get rewards and recognition, maybe not so much from the numbers that you have, but from the impact you have on others in their careers. And that became, I think, for me, my life's work was helping to grow organizations from the inside and the culture. And then you take good care of your people. I remember hearing a quote, and I think it's Richard Branson, who said, you take care of your people and your people will take care of your clients. You'll be just fine. And that was my niche. That was my role. And that's what I do with supplemental health care as well, and had done with Staffmark previously. I've only had a few companies that I've worked with, but the last few organizations that I've worked with have always been in that type of role and working with people that I love and respect and admire so much.
I just really appreciate your perspective coming from the support side of the house, knowing that the impact you can make is so tremendous for the business and the company. That you really can make a difference and you don't have to run a P&L to do that. So I appreciate the perspective that you bring to that. So thank you. I guess, Mary, a question I have for you, if you look back on your career, do you feel like, is there one defining career moment, something you can pinpoint?
Honestly, there's so many. I mean, I just spoke of the fact that when I made that decision to go into a role where I was supporting the organization, that was a defining moment. When I look back, though, I really think meeting Stephen Covey and having the opportunity to connect with him before he even wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People When we were at Adia, there was a small group of our executive leadership team that had a chance to bring him in while he was still teaching at BYU, I believe. And it was a small group of us, and he was teaching a couple of core principles, kind of helping us with team building. And I remember the moment when we played this game all around win-win. I don't know if you know Seven Habits, a book very well, but there's a concept called win-win. And that was a defining moment for me, because the competitor that I was going for win-lose. You know, it's like, you know, there's this, I wanted to win, and that meant the others had to lose. And to have this opportunity to go through this exercise where it doesn't necessarily mean that others lose because you win. And learning about the abundance mentality versus a scarcity mentality, those have been two things for me personally and professionally that I have found to be incredibly impactful and rewarding for me in my career, during my career, when I can focus on those things, abundance mentality versus scarcity mentality, playing win-win. I think those have helped me with my career. And then I think another defining moment was meeting Tyler Bracey. I was involved in picking a speaker for one of our national meetings, and Tyler Bracey was the author of a book called Managing from the Heart. And I remember hearing him and his concept, Managing from the Heart. You know, heart stands for H, hear and understand me. E, even if you disagree, please don't make me wrong. A, acknowledge the greatness within me. R, remember to look for my loving intentions. And T, tell me the truth with compassion. So it's funny, now being an author myself, the two defining moments, I think, in my career were meeting authors whose books had such profound influence on my outlook on leadership and personally my life. You know, I think those were two defining moments. And Tyler actually became a mentor and a coach for me when I wrote my book and published it. It was Tyler who really suggested that I take it to a broader audience, and I'm eternally grateful to him. And again, that was one of those connections. I think I poured a little comeback sauce on Tyler when he came to speak, you know, at the meeting we had, and we stayed fast friends. And it was that, I think, that relationship that I can attribute to. I thank him, thank him on the cover of the book, and both Stephen Covey and Tyler Bracey both endorsed Lunch Meet in Life Lessons, as did Ken Blanchard, which is amazing, you know. So I look back at that, and I think those were clearly defining moments for me in my outlook on life, and in my, I think, what my legacy will be as I leave this life.
Well, I would say it's interesting to hear you quote them as other people quote you as well. It's got to be really nice to see yourself kind of come full circle in your career and path, just to know that you are one of those people, those executives and leaders and coaches and authors and keynote speakers who, like the two you just quoted, are often referenced as well. So speaking of that, earlier you actually brought up a couple names, Lisa Francis and Bob Lavonius. I know you've also worked a lot with Donna Carroll. You've all kind of worked together at different companies throughout your career. How has that worked, and how have those relationships evolved for you over time?
Well, it's funny you bring up, you know, Bob and Donna, because Bob Lavonius is an advisor to our board at Supplement Healthcare. And then Donna is the president of our local division and our workforce solutions group. And again, you know those names as well from past life, working together at the Trion interim days. So, you know, I think it goes back to those connections that you make. You know, you realize what other people can bring to you to help you be better. And both Bob and Donna do that for me every day. The relationship, though, that for me is Lisa Francis, where I am eternally grateful for the day that actually I was a branch manager and we were opening a second office in Kansas City, and it was 1985. And one of the resumes for this position was Lisa Francis. And I was involved in hiring her. And I actually, she reported to me for a time. But, you know, when you meet someone and you know that this person, when you meet them, you think, this person's better than me, and this person is going to make me better. And Lisa would say, we make each other better. But I think it's during my career, there's been times that Lisa worked for me, or I worked for Lisa. When she took the role of CEO of Supplemental Healthcare, she wasn't here more than 6 months, I think. And I got a phone call from her, and she said, I have a role that I think you can be incredibly impactful with, and that's our chief talent officer. And, you know, focus on bringing in the best healthcare professionals we can and creating a culture of making sure that we work with them and want them to be part of something, and our internal team members. That's I think, Mary, this is a great role for you. And so, you know, this is I think, the third company that we worked at the same time, maybe fourth, actually, when I did some consulting when she was with another healthcare company. But I think I'm so grateful for that, that partnership that we have to make the best possible impact we can on the organizations we work with. And we're crazy about the organization we're with right now, and working with healthcare professionals and our internal team here at SHC. And so I feel very, you know, I know that's overused. Sometimes people say blessed, but I feel very blessed that I had that meeting with her in 1985 that has now turned into a partnership that I value personally and professionally more than words can say.
Oh, that's so nice. It's great to hear, and it's not cliche or overused to say blessed. I feel blessed as well. We, like you, a lot of people on our team, we've been together since 98, the Spherion days, and since we started ClearEdge 12 years ago. And just, I couldn't agree with you more. When you find those people who you look at and you admire and are inspired by and feel like they make you better, why not partner and work with them for your life? It can really make a difference for those around you as well. So just to switch gears for a minute here, Mary, in an industry where it's very male dominated in the C-suite, you've actually seen a completely different landscape, it seems like, over your career with a lot of strong female leaders by your side, including the likes of Lisa and Donna and many, many others. As an executive coach, what are the traits you see most in successful businesswomen? And does that differ at all from the men you coach? I guess any advice you can share with up-and-comer females in our industry would be really appreciative.
You know, I'm asked this a lot about what it takes to be a great female leader. And to be honest, I struggle with, and I might be naive, I get this. I might be naive when I answer this question because I have been so lucky to work in the staffing industry, the people business, because we do have so many female leaders that have been great role models for us. But I think the qualities are the same as the qualities that it takes for a man to be successful. You know, I think I don't really look at female leaders or male leaders. I look at leaders, and those qualities are, I think, the same. I think it's, you know, I always say to people, if someone's getting promoted, that the you know it's the right decision when there's a few things in place. So number one, they have clearly shown success. Whatever success is in their role, again, P&L, we've clearly, their numbers warrant it. You know they're successful. They have a history of success. And so whatever it is that they're responsible for has gone well. And number two is, you know, what it takes to be successful is that their peers all look and say, of course Leslie would be the person who would get that role. She's a natural for that. We all respect and admire her, and she advises. I mean, she's been doing the job for a while anyway. And then I think the third thing is that it's really easy to move people up the ladder when they've hired great people, and that it's easy to move someone up. I remember as a recruiter, when I was moved up to branch manager, my key thing was to make sure that I hired someone, my replacement, with the next recruiter I hired. And then when I was a branch manager, it was easy to promote me to an area manager because I had the branch manager replacement in mind. And all the way up, you know, when you have to hire an entry-level person to come into the organization when someone gets promoted, because clearly down the line, you've got people waiting in the wings because you've hired such talented people. That's easy to have you move up the ladder because you're surrounded by greatness. So I think it's all around be successful at whatever position you're in, whatever role, whatever impact you can. Make sure you clearly define success and what that is and show that you have evidence of that. Make sure you have connected really well with your peers and that they know and are aware of what you're doing and that you're supporting them along the way. So you have the respect and admiration of your peers. And then the third thing is hire great people. And all those things will be keys to your success. And I really don't think that's any different between a man or a woman.
I agree with you and definitely believe that having that succession seat, and Colleen Tyner, actually she's an executive at Beeline, had mentioned that on one of our podcasts. And it's really not just your own succession seat, but looking at those around you and helping rise them up as well. So if you surround yourself with people who you can mentor and help lead and manage and help move them up as well, you're continuing that path for a while. So again, I have a few checklist things coming out of that for you. So thank you. We often, you know, it's interesting because it's your perspective means a lot to me looking at who you were surrounded by. If you, and I had the same thing at Sphereon when I was there, the people around me, it was a great mix. It was very diverse and you experienced the same thing. Yet when I'm interviewing a lot of people on our podcast and looking at a lot of the different companies in the, you know, the top 50 staffing firms in the US, there isn't a whole lot of diversity in the C-suite itself. So that's usually why we ask that question, but your recipe is right. So hopefully there are people listening and we'll help with that across other companies in our space. So I want to shift gears for a minute back to your book and chapter 5. I cite this chapter quite often, and I'd love to hear your take on it because people struggle with this a lot. And chapter 5 is bring out the best. I hear scenarios like the one you share, what it almost feels like daily, and finding the like and all of that. So I really believe our listeners should benefit from your insights on chapter 5, bringing out the best.
Well, you are not alone. I'm going to tell you this because I never know when I wake up in the morning who's going to send me an email about the book I wrote. Because, you know, here it's on Amazon. Anyone can buy it. People find it, or they'll Google inspirational, you know, angry coworker. It's funny the things that find the light comes in, and when you do a Google search. But the chapter is all about bring out the best. But what that whole section is about is if anyone who's listening to this podcast has ever worked with someone they don't like, they would relate. So I don't think anyone who's listening to this podcast would honestly say that they haven't. So I always say when I do my keynote speeches, raise your hand if you've ever worked with someone you don't like. And everyone raises their hand. I said, oh, and if there's someone who doesn't, you're lying. Because sometimes we have these relationships. And I even use raise your hand if you've ever been related to someone you don't like. You know, I'm from a big family, so I raise my hand on that one too.
Right.
But it's not just at work, it's home. And the chapter, we don't have enough time to go into great detail, but the essence of it is find the like. You know, it's the solution is it's, when I had my biggest customer, and her name was Linda Brown, but in the book I call her Lisa Gray, and she was my biggest client at Macy's in Kansas City, and then we were the number one office in the Adecco network, Audio Network at the time, and it was because I landed the Macy's account. And I thought I landed it because I was the greatest salesperson in Kansas City in staffing, you know. And I realized about 3 weeks into it that I didn't get the account because I was such a great salesperson. I got it because the woman who was her contact there was the biggest witch. And some people wouldn't use the witch word. She was so mean and hateful that. And I remember talking to my dad about it. I said, yeah, she's impossible. She's horrible. She's fake. She's this. And I was whining about my biggest client. And my dad said, what would happen if you lost her as a client? I said, it's bad. We'd have to lay off our in-house temp. Our bonuses would go down. We wouldn't be the number one office. It would be really bad. And he said, well, then you got a problem. And I said, I know I have a problem. My problem is Lisa Gray. And he said, no, you have a problem. Your problem is you don't like your biggest client. And if you lose this client, there's going to be a price to pay that you don't want to pay. And your problem's bigger than you realize. Have you ever heard the phrase, if you don't like somebody, they don't like you? He said, that's impossible. I'm me and everyone likes me. And he goes, no, they don't. I told you. She doesn't like you if you don't like her. She can hear your voice over the line. You know, you can't hide how you feel about someone. So you got to change how you feel about them, or you got to get out of it. He goes, your solution's simple. Find the like. And I thought it was the dumbest piece of advice I'd ever gotten. But I remember going back to my office and thinking, watching the people in my office, and they talked about her behind, you know, as soon as they'd hang up the phone, can you believe her? Can you believe? And I remember, you know, I gave everybody a challenge. We have to find the like in Lisa Gray because we're going to lose her if we don't. And I was quoting my dad, who I thought was crazy a little bit earlier. But the essence of this, and again, if you could read the chapter or even listen to the audiobook section, and you can go to marybelucas.com and listen to it. But it's basically great advice to change your perspective about working with people that you don't like. And bring out the best in them and look for the best in them. I loved when I got my executive coaching certification, what I learned about appreciative inquiry. It's basically your textbook to find how to find the like in the people you don't like. You ask questions that bring out the best in people, you know, only kinds of questions. You don't say, how was your weekend? Because negative Nellies are going to talk about everything that went wrong. You say, what was the best part of your weekend? You bring out the best in people, and all of a sudden your perspective about them changes. And again, I'm not saying this works in every relationship. Some relationships you should get out of. But when the relationship is important enough that the price that you would pay for having to get out of it is a price you don't want to pay, stop focusing on what's wrong with that individual and find what's right. Find the like. And that's the essence of, you know, putting it in perspective and making sure you bring out the best. And I, again, another piece of advice that works at work and works at home, but it's life-changing when you start looking at what's right with people instead of what's wrong with people, and you stop being negative about someone that their relationship is important to you. So make that relationship the best it can be. And that's the essence of that chapter.
I am going to have everyone on our team listen to the audio or read that chapter again, being in the service industry. So we're all in the people industry and we're all in the service industry. It's so important. And finding that like is, it's just critical. And we've all had challenging people to work with. So I, like I said, reference it often. And I, yes, I need to share that. And I bet you get a few people listening who are going to be going out to buy your book on that topic alone. So Mary, I want to ask you a question, even listening to you on the phone. And, you know, I'm sure these things have grown over time for you, especially as you have found your own voice and you have this, you know, a wonderful book with great stories and things to reference. And you have apparently the best memory ever. I've seen a million keynotes. However, you can cite and remember several of them. Which is impressive. From the outside looking in, you seem so full of confidence. Was there ever a time where you faced self-doubt or questioned if you could make it? And if so, what did you do to overcome those? And I guess if I'm going to just quote your book one more time before we end, this kind of came to mind for me. The first hunk of meat you sell is yourself.
And really, that's the first bit of advice, even before comeback sauce. I love that you quote that because, you know, that was what my dad said, is always remember. And then the first time to meet you sell is yourself, and that you're the connection. And that goes back to what I started the conversation with. You make meaningful connections one person at a time. So I think it's funny that you think I have this high level of confidence because I'm a work in progress, just like everybody who's listening to this is. Some things I'm more confident at than others. It's just, honestly, I think it's not about confidence. It's just about enjoying the ride, you know, and you know, there's so many quotes of, yeah, the first time to meet you sell yourself, and you make a lasting impression with comeback sauce. And at the end of the day, though, I think my favorites are the quotes around, don't take life so seriously, you're never going to get out of it alive anyway, you know, you know, or, you know, enjoy the ride. Nobody makes you happy but yourself. Celebrate every chance you get. Or my absolute personal favorite, I think, in terms of the celebration series that I share, that I learned growing up, is if you don't have a happy birthday, it's your own damn fault. So I think it's about not waiting for other people to make you happy, you know. It's about you doing that. So I think it's not so much confidence, it's just I really do enjoy the ride. And if I could speak to my younger self, my 22-year-old or my 30-year-old or my younger self, when I look back, I think I just took things so much more seriously. And again, you can be successful, I believe, and I've seen it because I've experienced it. You can be successful without having to be so, you know, intense all the time. It's just enjoy the ride, and then people enjoy it being on that ride with you, and they want to be part of your journey. And I think that's maybe what fueled my confidence, is that, you know, nobody can hurt me but me, you know. And so, you know, no matter what criticism it is, it certainly can bother me. I'm a high I when you look at the disc profile, but at the end of the day, it doesn't define me. And so that's been a long, road
right.
coming to get to that point. But, I just think that's really the core of all of it.
Well, and I like your point about being a work in progress. People say the same thing to me a lot as well. And I often think, you know, it's just what people see on the outside isn't always what you're feeling on the inside per se. And however, putting yourself out there and continuing to do things that challenge you and help you build that confidence definitely helps. And at the end of the day, someone had said to me, I wrote an article about when I first started ClearEdge, because I came from the operations side, didn't run a P&L, didn't have a lot of those experiences. It was a challenge for me to see myself as a CEO. And someone wrote a comment and said, the only person who takes that CEO hat off is yourself. So it reminds me a little bit about what you just said. It's like looking in mm-hmm. that mirror and just feeling like confident about yourself. And if you don't love yourself and believe in yourself, it's really hard to get other people to do the same. So,
we're all full of so many mistakes. I mean, that guy's made some crazy dumb mistakes. Yet I'm the sum total of all of the ways I got back on track after that. So, yeah, I couldn't agree more. So, and I know you want to close. So, what's your last question?
Oh gosh,
Melissa? What's the last thing you want to ask me?
Listen, I want to keep talking to you forever. So, if you ever have any openings, let me know. I'm here and ready to be by your side. No, you truly are inspirational and have so much great advice to give people. And I guess I would ask you, kind of, you've shared a lot of different pieces of advice, obviously, throughout your career and from your father. What is the best piece of advice you have ever been given? What was it? And then how have you been able to apply that in your personal and professional life? It may be difficult to narrow that down, I'm guessing, but if there's one thing that stands out, what would it be?
Oh, it's not difficult at all. It's absolutely so easy. You know, and I talk a lot about my dad. I don't want to take away from my mom. You know, my mom was a huge influence in my life as well and inspired me beyond words. You know, when she passed away, I only wanted that needle point that hung on her kitchen wall that said, a mother is the only person on earth who can have 10 children and yet each child have all her love. So she was incredibly impactful in my life, yet my dad was a lot more vocal. My mom was an only child who had 10 kids and she liked the spotlight on everyone else. And she passed away before my dad did. So when you asked that question, what's the most meaningful advice that you got? It was that's the last chapter of my book. It was the advice my father gave me the day he passed away. My mother had passed away 5 years before, and my dad was in his bed, and they gave him hours to live. And I'm crying, and I laid my head on my dad's shoulder, and I'm crying. What am I going to do now, Dad? You know, you're going to go. What am I going to do? Who's going to inspire me now? And without missing a beat, he said, oh, Mary, that's so easy. Your mother and I have taught you well. Inspire yourself. You'll figure it out. Inspire yourself. And that's exactly what I did. When he passed away, the epitaph on his tombstone is, to live in hearts we leave behind means not to die. And I took that little bit of wisdom that he shared with me in his last day, inspire yourself. And I breathed life into that epitaph, to live in hearts we leave behind is not to die. And I wrote a book called Lunch, Meat, and Life Lessons, and I inspired myself when I wrote it. And now I continue to inspire myself every day when I think about the wisdom that's in that book, but more importantly, when I live the wisdom that's in that book. And so the greatest advice I ever got without question was, inspire yourself. You'll figure it out. And that I think I look for inspiration beyond Lunch, Meat, and Life Lessons. I look for it from the people I work with every day, the people I connect with every day. I look for things that are inspiring me that don't bring me down. And that's how I figure out how to inspire myself. So I challenge all of your listeners to do the same.
Oh, my God.
Look each and every day for ways to inspire yourself.
Well, thank you for inspiring me today. And before I break down in tears here with your last story, oh, my gosh. Thank you for sharing that. Mary, people are going to want to get in touch with you. You cited your URL a couple of times. I just want to make sure we get it out there one last time. What is the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, obviously there's the website, which is all about the book and like the coaching and speaking. It's separate from my supplemental health care account, but it's all joined. Supplemental health care loves it when I'm connected with the book. You know, all of our new hires read the book. It's part of who we are. But at marybluecus.com, just marybluecus.com, or I'm an open book, honestly. If anyone wants to connect with me, my email is mary@marybluecus.com. Just mary@marybluecus.com, or you know, you can follow me on LinkedIn. It's Mary B. Lucas. The group is author, speaker, people connector. Same with Facebook fan page. And then, of course, the book is on Amazon.com. And Twitter is @marybluecus.com. And I'd like to say I'm as active on social as I'd like to be, but I think there's a lot of videos. And you can see the video, find the like on the website. But I love being connected, and it's more that one-on-one connection I think that I'm good at than it is really putting a lot of stuff out there socially. I think for me it's really about if someone wants to connect, I love sharing the wisdom that I've learned through my career, and I love making those meaningful connections because obviously, as I've shared, you never know where the next connection is going to take you, and so I feel like I've got a long road ahead of me, and I look forward to many meaningful connections, and I hope that I connect with many of your listeners, Leslie, and I thank you so much for having me today. I think I'll have a better day. My husband always tells me whenever I'm cranky or down the dumps, he'll say, go do a speech. You'll be much nicer afterwards, because everything I shared with you is like what inspires me too. So thanks for the inspiration.
Oh, my God.
Today.
Well, thank you again for being on the Edge podcast. I know I will be looking up the Find the Like and Comeback Sauce, the TED Talk for Comeback Sauce, and on your site. If anyone's listening and you are looking for, I don't normally do big pitches on the podcast, but if you are looking for a keynote or speaker, company kickoff meetings, all kinds of great things. I've heard Mary speak numerous times and highly recommend her. And if anything, just be inspired by watching some of the videos or reading the book and share that inspiration with others. I know just in sharing some of your stories, how it has impacted others. And I just thank you. And thank you again for being a wonderful part of our industry. And I look forward to seeing you at upcoming conferences.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this week's The Edge episode. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And you can also email me at etatum, T-A-T-U-M, @clearedgemarketing.com. And let me know if you have any questions or if you want to hear about anything in particular as it relates to our Women in Staffing series or our marketing episodes. So just shoot me an email and I look forward to connecting with you. Thank you.